Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites.
Well, this week I saw two Broadway shows and one off the White Way. And wouldn't you know, I like the little one best. The big ones include a colorful, expensive, splashy, pun intended, stage version of a popular kids' TV series. The other is a one-man show featuring a performer who has charmed us in all mediums. Well, let's go underwater first. SpongeBob SquarePants, playing at the Palace Theater, is an almost blinding ADD experience in its costumes, sets, huge cast, and special effects. Obviously, there's no reason to see this supposedly $20 million production unless you either have kids or grandkids with you or grew up with the Nickelodeon series and can't wait to see how they humanized animated characters who live in an under-the-sea town called Bikini Bottom. Well, to answer that question, they do it very well. What do you need to know? Well, this is a 2.5-hour musical. There were plenty of young children in my performance and not a lot of squirming, so that was lovely to see. There is a very simple plot that just about any age group can grasp. A volcano is about to go off and the characters have 24 hours to prevent what is predicted to be the end of their world. All kinds of songs are included by composers as varied as Aerosmith, Cyndi Lauper, and John Legend. But mostly it's about the nonstop energy. Now, I saw a matinee, and the very idea that these folks had to do it all over again that evening made me want to take a nap. Now, speaking of the cast, they are all very good, most especially Lily Cooper as Sandy, and the star of the show, SpongeBob himself, played by Ethan Slater, making his Broadway debut. Depending on what the spring offers in musical performances, Slater could grab a Tony nomination. Now, to be honest, I thought the show was going to be more along the lines of an Avenue Q, meaning enough veiled, raunchy stuff to keep the grown-ups happy. Well, some winking wit does sneak through, but this is authentic family material. You know, what's wrong with a little childish optimism at this time? This will be the best day ever, is SpongeBob's opening mantra. You always say that, comes the response. And it's always true, says our leading sponge. Now, in contrast to that experience, if simple, old-fashioned storytelling is your thing, you will likely enjoy John Lithgow's Stories from the Heart, which is a new roundabout production at the American Airlines Theater. So what the hell is this, are Lithgow's first words. You all look so hopeful and eager. Well, it's a rather unique one-man show, and yes, we are hopeful because we love and appreciate this man's work. Now, first you should be warned, this is not Lithgow telling us juicy stories about the famous people he's worked with, or even really much about how he got started in acting and so on. Now, though, there is a personal framing to this two-act piece, which gives us a taste of his Ohio childhood, and most important, a sense of his father, a man he describes as always one step ahead of ruination. Essentially, though, this is Lithgow pulling out a dog-eared book of short stories from which his father read John and his siblings' bedtime stories, and from which he proceeds to read, or enact is a better description, two very long ones, word by word. The first is by Ring Lardner Jr., and the second by P.J. Wodehouse. I confess the first, called Haircut, is somewhat difficult to follow, and your mind may wander, mine did, but Lithgow manages to mime every prop and action that a barber would hold and do. The second story, Uncle Fred Flitz Eye, written by Wodehouse, is hilarious and much easier to follow, if for no other reason than Lithgow plays every single character perfectly, including a parrot, by the way. Stories by Heart is most powerful and relatable with when the actor talks about his father's final years. I was the only sibling out of work, he explains. Well, that's an actor's lament, as to why he was the one selected to care for the ailing parents. A sad time, yes, but one that he felt privileged to have had. Hey, how often do we get to read our parents the same stories they regaled us with at bedtime? Again, as long as you know what the show is going to be, and if you enjoy the art of storytelling, you will be pleased. And you have to admire John Lithgow, who took this one on the road for years of fine-tuning and now has brought it back to the city, where he starred in King Lear, M. Butterfly, A Delicate Balance, and so many more. Now, speaking of good stories, the Mint Theater Company keeps finding old ones, long-forgotten and or unsuccessful plays, very often non-American ones, and they present them to loyal fans. The newest one at the Clurman stage on Theater Row is called Hindle Wakes by one Stanley Houghton. It takes place in Lancashire, England, features 5 full-bodied scenes during which we get to know 9 characters, even the servant who hardly speaks, surprisingly well. The story deals with 2 families and what transpires when a young man from one has a racy weekend with the daughter of the other. Well, let's just say there are repercussions that keep revealing themselves. It happens to many, alas, but I didn't think it would happen to a lass of mine, whines one character. The play starts slowly, but in the end, I think I can say, now that the Doll's House 2 has closed, that it is the most feminist play showing in New York City. And bear in mind, Stanley Houghton wrote it in 1912. One of my favorite things about these old works is that the authors took time creating complex, numerous characters, and the playwrights themselves always have interesting backstories, almost as interesting as their plays. Houghton, for example, was a controversial figure simply because he mostly wrote about women, calling dramatically for their sexual and economic rights. Sadly, he died a year after this play was produced. It had closed quickly on Broadway, despite splendid reviews, and enjoyed a better run in Chicago, but in his own country, the play was all but banned. Hindle Wakes has humor, humanity, obviously great resonance, and, well, thank you once again, Mint Artistic Director Jonathan Bank, for going way back in time to find things that tell us so much about our own. So, that was my week, Jill. How was yours?
What are you looking forward to next?
Let's see. Thursday night, I'm going to see Mark Rylance in Farinelli and the King. And I always look forward to seeing Mark Rylance because it's such a privilege to see him on stage. I think the last time I saw him, he was fly fishing in Brooklyn at St. Anne's Warehouse. Before that, he was playing a woman in Twelfth Night. You know, the guy never fails to not
deliver.
To not deliver and to not cause tremendous enjoyment, even if the play isn't quite up to his talents.
And
but
you know,
I look forward to.
What's great about that is you just said something really important. It is about the performance and it's about the entertainment. You know, and just being there more it's an experience just to go.
Yeah, it's not often that we have somebody like him, and you just kind of always know you're going to enjoy it. In a funny way, John Lithgow, who I talked about this week, is a little bit like that. You know he's so talented. He tries so hard. He's earned so much respect over the years. And you just want it to work. You want to be there with them, and they've earned it. So I'm looking forward to Mark Rylance.
I wanted to ask you about that I saw the other. I saw it was before Christmas, and I don't know whether we mentioned it, but the Donna Summers jukebox.
Yeah, is that coming this season?
That's apparently starting the 23rd of April, so they're opening it pre-Tonys. Uh-huh. And
just barely. That may be the week before.
And so I was interested. I somehow didn't focus on the fact that along with the other Cher and Tina. I didn't focus on the Donna Summers that it was going to be the first to arrive.
I guess it is. You're right. There is a group of those coming. The jukebox, largely about women. I guess they. Carole King show was, and when A Waitress is not about a singer, it's written by a singer. Yeah, so that's right. I didn't realize that one was coming. And is that played by a number of actresses over the... some of them are. They're played by different actresses.
Three actresses, at various, apparently. As it is written, three actresses at various points.
Right. Well, we'll see how that one does. We haven't had a jukebox for a while. I'm trying to think the last one that came and went. But no, the other shows coming are all the revivals, which we've talked about here. They're big ones. My Fair Lady, Carousel, Angels in America. You know, lots and lots of old plays, but coming back to hopefully find young audiences and new audiences. And they're allowed to do that. But we also celebrate the new stuff. Right. Whatever you say about jukebox musicals, so I guess you'd say that the the one about Gloria Estefan, that was a success, On Your Feet. So women, hey, you know.
I probably shouldn't even say this, so I will just try and diplomatize myself simply by saying it's not hard to find women represented on Broadway. And while they're with everything, you know, nothing. It is not perfect. It's not. Let's just say as slim pickings as in certain other fields.
Yeah. No. It's listen. Women are having a moment, as we know. So why shouldn't they be celebrated? And listen, by the way, Bette Midler is leaving this week. She may have already had her last one last night. So. Bernadette Peters, another celebrated woman, almost a female version of Mark Rylance in a way. You always know you're going to enjoy Bernadette, even if the show isn't quite up to her. And many of hers haven't been, but boy, does she ever deliver too. So yeah, a lot to look forward to, and we'll see how these jukeboxes do. They're not entirely original, but you know, think of all the ones ahead of us. Somebody's going to do a Barbara Streisand story at some point.
I'm waiting. I keep checking my watch for that. Last question, just about how long is Bernadette in Dolly?
You know, that's a good question. I have not seen a time limit put on that one, so I'm not. I think it may run. You know, it could. I could say it could. It could run through the summer. She usually does these things for at least a year. I've not heard anything limited on that. Not like the story I just wrote this week about the Michelangelo exhibit at the Met. I interviewed the curator. You cannot believe the logistics of getting those works here, and it's only here for 3 months, even though it's the most successful show the Met's ever had. Could go on endlessly. But those works are so fragile, they can only stay up in that kind of light for 3 months at a time. So I don't know if there's a comparison there to some of these actors. Can they only stay up for 3 months at a time?
No, you know. It it depends. But you raise a good point. We're going to run out of time. But in the last minute, people, once again, have become so accustomed to just watching the spectacle that there's no sense of what goes into presenting the spectacle. And I think that watching the spectacle is that much more entertaining if you know what, you know, some of the ingredients that you've got to pour into the pot and, you know, add this and stir.
That's right, which is why I went back to Michelangelo. And if nothing else, go see SpongeBob, because that is a spectacle.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.